Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're here today with the creator of HBO's The White Lotus, Mr. Mike White. The show is up for 20 Emmy nominations, and we're also talking about season two with him. 20 Emmy nominations. Does the success of this series, did it surprise you that it resonated so much? Or was it that we all wanted to go on vacation to Hawaii as the pandemic was opening up? I'm just curious, because this really connected with a lot of people.
Yeah, I've made a lot of stuff in my career, and some stuff like ends up on a shelf in some network building and never even makes air. So like I was surprised. I liked the show, but I don't know. I think people were maybe, yeah, like been bottled up for because of the pandemic, and being able to, you know, go on vacation and eat. I think there's something just, yeah, kind of, there's a pleasure about like eavesdropping on other people on their vacations, even when you're on your own. And I don't know, something about, just the vibe of the show. I think we just, you know, and HBO's, you know, the fact that we were able to like be, spoon fed a little bit, like, well, you know, like just drop once a week and in kind of that more linear way of letting the show out, I think it just built a, like, people started talking about it, and then it just kind of got more feverish as it went along, which was really surprising but cool.
I'm gonna come back to what Jennifer Coolidge told me about you, but before that, how much of you is in the show? What character do you identify with? And like, you're in Hawaii. Hello. You must see these horrible vacations going on. You must be witnessing them firsthand, these awful people.
The truth is, it's like, I don't think you can really write characters unless you see, at least for me, like, unless there's a bit of them in you. So like, I remember talking to Jake Lacy, and he was like, oh yeah, this guy is so, and I was like, this guy is kind of me. There's a little bit of me in this guy. Like, I mean, I definitely am, you know, I'm not like, there's lots of things that aren't me about him, but like there is, you know, there's always, I do have this sort of like, you know, wait, that I you know, like I ordered this room, like here is the proof. Like, you know, like, you know, it's like that kind of like, like that there's some injustice that is like that could end up like ruining my vacation, where, you know, and of course you don't want to be that guy, but, and you don't want to like admit that you're that guy, but there is moments where I'm just like, wait, I think I'm pretty sure I booked the other room, and then I just can't let it go. So like 3 days into the vacation, I'm like, I know we were in the other room, and like, and so like I think there's a little bit of me in all of the different characters. There's definitely a part of me that's Jennifer's character. I mean, it's, I don't know. Like I'm hopefully not as annoying as a lot of the characters in the show, but I think I have the ability to be that.
You're in Hawaii now, and I've known this for quite some time, but did you write this while you were in Hawaii?
Well, I started it writing it in LA, and then HBO actually, at the time, we were just kind of an experimental show, and they were just very needy for content. And so they were like, okay, I wrote like the first two episodes, and they were like, okay, you could go do this. And so then I flew to Hawaii, and we actually moved into the Four Seasons, and I wrote the last couple episodes in situ right there at the Four Seasons, kind of like trying to get a sense of where we would, you know, because like we were kind of prepping, writing, and casting all at the same time.
Now, Jennifer said to me, we were in the same tent on the Serengeti. He learned a lot of things about me on that trip. I don't think I'm fully Tanya, but there were specific things about me that were eccentric. He put in there the script. Can you expound on that?
I mean, there's definitely a part of Jennifer. Yeah. I mean, I've been friends with her for a long time, and she's not as much of a mess as Tanya, obviously, but like, you know, she's like very successful, like functional person, but like she does have, you know, she does sort of like, she's very kind. And so, and she's very neurotic. And so she gets very wrapped up in the, like, you know, it's like, so she'll, you know, people that work at this hotel, she'll, you know, get into conversation with them. And then there's a lot of anxiety about how much she should tip them, and then she knows everything about their life story, and then it's like, and then like she goes down these rabbit holes. So like there's just a lot of that with her. And then it's like at some point, you know, you have to like leave the hotel. You can't like bring everybody home with you or take care of everybody that you know. It's like she just has a huge heart, and then it, you know, it sets up these like, you know, complicated relationships with people that she runs into through her life.
How did you start cracking this? Were the themes already there, or did you just start writing your characters and then the whole thing about the abuse of privilege and, you know, the division of class, did that work its way in later, or was that there from the onset? Did you know your theme before you started writing?
The truth was that what I wanted to do originally was a show about a couple on a honeymoon. And that on their honeymoon, they realize, or one of them realizes, that the person they thought they were marrying, you know, that somehow travel and being on a vacation, they start to see that the person that they don't really know the person until they are in this kind of situation. And so that was the original idea. And so it was going to be more of a honeymoon show, but then the bottle idea of like, you know, just we had to be in one hotel. And I was like, well, we probably need to follow other guests. But it was kind of, it started about money being the thing that made, you know, like money, how money impacts like even intimate relationships. And then I just sort of, that idea then just built out to the rest of the storylines, where I was just like, it should be about how money kind of, and who has the money, can impact every kind of a relationship, whether it's of, you know, parent child, or like a wife and a husband, you know, or the, you know, the employees and the guests. And so it just kind of was like, it felt like that was like a rich subject to explore.
Now, what pulls us through is a mystery. Somebody's dead at the beginning. We don't know who that is. We have an assumption, and man, we want to see that. We want to see how that unfolds. Was that also always there from the onset, or like, when did you say, I need a string here?
You know, honestly, when I just first sat down to write, I was like, I kind of feel like we need to do something, start at the end and then go back. And yeah, I don't usually do mysteries. I'm not really, that's not really like, I'm not known
for
that.
But it was great.
And so I just thought, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it just felt like it was like, maybe this was a hook. I didn't realize how much that kind of hook really does hook people in. And so less like, yeah, note to self, like, yeah, sometimes that kind of thing actually really does bring people in. I knew somebody was going to die. So like, I was like, I need this to build to like a kind of operatic conclusion. So I was like, well, let's make the most of this and like kind of tease that out. So that was, but it was, yeah, it turned out to be a more effective hook than I would have ever expected. So I don't know. It's nice.
The brilliance of Paula and Olivia, this twinning, and that they're both the vocal voices of privilege, and they're sniping, you know, behind everybody's back and deconstructing them, and then they fray apart.
Yeah.
Blow our minds about how that came to be, because that, like your mystery, is also another great, and, you know, Paula as a cipher.
Yeah, I love the idea of like, yeah, starting with these two girls and the way that you first meet, you know, because I don't know, the whole setup reminded me of like a Fantasy Island, where like Fantasy Island, you know, you have like Ricardo Montalban and like the, and Tattoo, and they're, they, you know, you see each each character, and then they say this is their problem and this is who they are, and you like locate them in this, you know, specific, you know, I like whatever cultural cliche. And I was like, it'd be fun to start this with like two people who are like doing kind of guessing who everyone is, but they're kind of wrong, they're kind of right, they're kind of wrong. So like the audience meets everybody and they start off with a certain kind of impression, and it's not exactly right. And I was just like, and that's kind of, it felt like that was a cool idea just for the whole way of like exploring character, which is like, nobody's exactly what they seem. And then these two girls that you see, and like, I wanted to shoot them at the beginning where they're all kind of in two shots, we're in a two shot. So you see them, they're like a pair. And you, every time you see them, they're like, you know, literally sharing the screen together. And then you like you create a wedge between them, and then you realize they come from totally different lives and they are totally different. And I just felt like that was a fun kind of like Greek chorus to explore, that you think, oh, they're these like just providing commentary to the stuff that's going on at the hotel, but then you realize there's like really the drama is right here, you know.
Armand meeting a tragic end. Was that evident to you from the beginning? Because that, again, was a very clever death.
Yeah, I just felt like it was like, again, the original idea was about this couple. And I was thinking, yeah, he's complaining about his room. And I was just like, it'd be so fun if like this stupid, yeah, little issue just... yeah, like steamrolls into something that's actually, you know, tragic in a way, but it's still landing in a kind of absurd place. So I was like, so I wanted to create a character in Armand who is like really has like drunk the Kool-Aid of the service culture, and then has this kind of, yeah, like crisis of like existential crisis, and then yeah, it turns into the opposite, where he really realizes he's wasted his whole life, and how deep the bitterness runs, and that he could do all that in a week. It would seem like it'd be a fun turn for an actor.
Let's go back to your beginnings, breaking in and selling Dead Man on Campus. Tell us about what was it like in the beginning of your writing career. I know you wrote on Dawson's Creek, but what was the scene like in Hollywood? Were there certain things you could and could not do? Did you have three specs under your arm, you know, that you were trying to get an agent with?
I wrote a couple of scripts. Dead Man on Campus was a movie that was already going, and they brought me on to rewrite it. So it was not a script of mine, but I was hired to rewrite it. When I started, I you know, didn't really know anybody. I basically wrote The Good Girl and Chuck and Buck as spec scripts, and those scripts ended up finding their way into hands of different producers, and that's how I ended up getting jobs on Dawson's Creek and getting the Dead Man on Campus script. Yeah, I was somebody who was like, yeah, just kind of like was living in sort of prison-like conditions with like no money and trying to get out of my mom's condo in Glendale, and was just like, you know, like furiously just trying to write as much as I could to, yeah, get out of the little jail I was in.
I love Orange County to this day.
Oh, thank you.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you're born in Pasadena.
I was born in Pasadena, but my family is spread through the inland and Orange County, and yeah, so I have relatives all through the Inland Empire, basically.
What's your take on feature comedies today? Do you think you could pull one off if you pivoted back to features, or?
I don't know. Have I done a feature comedy? Or at least recently, it's comedy is definitely in a weird state. You know, it's like hard to. You know, like something like School of Rock, I don't know, are they making, it's like, it's such a weird time for movies in general. And so I just, it's like, and as I get older, I tend to like, some comedies feel too, it's like, I like White Lotus, I feel like it's funny, but it feels like it has a little bit more, I don't know, you know, there's more teeth to it. And it's just, and so like, I'm more, if I can do that kind of work, then that's what I want to do. But yeah, I think the world of comedy is complicated just because people have gotten very careful and yeah. And also the movie business is also just in a weird place. So it's just a weird time, you know. Obviously people want to be entertained. They want to laugh. So there'll always be some new way to find comedy, but it just feels a little, yeah, it's definitely in a transitional place. I don't know where exactly it's going.
Now I'm going to ask about season 2 of White Lotus. Don't worry. We're not going to have major spoilers here. When did you come to the point where you said, yes, a season 2 is possible? I'm going to do this.
Well, I like working with HBO. I like working. And just the idea of being able to travel and also do something like this and like go to like somewhere like Italy, you know, at the time it wasn't necessarily going to be Italy, but I mean, to me, that's like cracking the code. That's everything that I want, which is to like, you know, I'm not in a stage in Burbank. I'm like, I don't know, going somewhere cool and also, you know, trying to create a whole new kind of vibe. You know, I'm not somebody who's good at like sustaining on a show for season after season. I kind of have a more, I don't know, that's not my storytelling skill. So it's like to be able to like come in with new characters and really blow it out and like just go for it, like, and not, you know, not have to like hold on to a franchise and just in have it be more like an anthology. That just seems really fun. So like, that's something I'd still love to do. Like, so like if this season turns out good or HBO still likes me at the end of it, I would still keep doing it.
Can you tease? Is it a new mystery? Is it the evolution of Tanya?
There's a new mystery. There is an evolution of Tanya, and it's a whole new set, and it's a whole new set of characters. And I think it's like, it definitely feels like it's still White Lotus, but it has a different kind of, it's like the theme is slightly, it's different. It's not really about the power tripping, you know, it's not about the power dynamics so much. It's more of a, about men and women and sexual politics and it's, but yeah, I'm excited about it. As it's coming together, I feel like it's its own vibe, but it feels, I feel like if people liked the first one, I feel like they might like this one too. That would be cool.
When do you think we'll get to see it?
When?
Yeah. Have they put a date?
I think they mentioned that it's coming, yeah, it starts in October maybe, or sometime in the late fall.
Oh, that's great. When I was talking to a number of the Emmy-nominated actors on Emmy-nom Day, they were mentioning, oh, he calls me up and he said, I got an idea for your character. You know, like Alexandra Daddario was saying, you know, he had this idea of seeing me and Lacey in the back, you know, in a background scene. Are you thinking of season 3 and like thinking of, hey, maybe we'll return some of the core cast?
Yeah, I definitely, it would be really fun to take a character or a couple characters from the first season and have them come into the third season. It's definitely something I'm trying to figure out. I mean, this cast has now gotten so like busy and they're all in demand, so that's cool for them, but then it's like complicated for me because it's like, oh, how are we gonna be able to, who are we gonna be able to get back? Which I'd love to. It's, you know, it's so special when you work with actors that you really fall in love with, and so, and I definitely have done that with both seasons. So yeah, there's just a surfeit of cool people I'd love to do it again with, and Jennifer as well, you know, so like everybody, you never know.
Will you have a new music theme? Because the main title theme is so, I mean, first of all, it's fantastic, but it has...
Yeah, we've, Christo, our composer, who's a genius, you know, a lot of the cues last year had to do with, had a sort of tropical unease vibe. And So that doesn't really work for Italy, but it's like, so yeah. So for the main theme, he's like redone it. I think he's done a genius job, which is like, he's created a sort of more Italian classical entry point, and then the hook comes in. So it has like, yeah, it has a little, it has the hook, the old hook, but in a new kind of, it's like a remix. It's the Italian remix. So yeah, that's that, I think. And that's the hope. We're still putting the show together, obviously. And, but that's the hope, is that it has the vibe of last year, certainly the same composer, but then just different kind of textures and something that feels more Sicilian and Italian and less like tropical.
Mike White, thank you.
Thank you for talking to me.
No, thank you for talking to me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.